Welcome to Coffee House Shots, the Spectator's daily politics podcast. I'm Isabel Hardman and I'm joined by James Forsyth and Katie Balls. Yesterday, Theresa May gave a statement in the House of Commons which seems to have agitated some Brexiteers on some of the details of her negotiations with the European Union. James, just tell us a little bit about what the Prime Minister told MPs yesterday.
Well, on the one hand, she emphasised far more than she did in the Florence speech, the fact that the government is preparing for a no-deal scenario. She kept saying the UK is preparing for every contingency. But the biggest piece of news in the statement came in response to a question from Jacob Rees-Mogg, when Theresa May admitted that the European Court of Justice would still be the kind of final arbiter, for at least during the early stages of any transition from the UK out of the EU. Now, I think this makes the transition deal much more likely, because this is something that the EU would have wanted. But I think it is going to upset some Tory Brexiteers. I think it is quite clear that Boris Johnson and Michael Gove, who both kind of tweeted in support of the Prime Minister last night, they decided to keep their powder dry because what they are worried about is the end state. You know, what is the final EU-UK relationship? They basically both said last night, look, don't sweat the transition. As long as we get what we want on the end state, that's all right. But I think some on the Tory backbenches are beginning to worry that this is Brexit delayed.
And this was Theresa May's first speech statement since the last conference speech, which didn't go quite so well. Katie, do you think that it has moved her authority on in the party, or do you think that actually she's just where she was before conference season?
I think straight after conference, she looked in a weaker position than she was before conference season. I think she was probably quite glad to get back to the business of Parliament and get to the dispatch box, because that's a place where she is fairly comfortable. And I think for her, a not particularly charismatic or showy politician, if she looks like she's busy with the business of governing, that's one of her strongest points. So I think yesterday she seemed a lot better. She could actually get sentences out. She didn't see any strepsils. There was no cough.
Gosh, really high bar here.
Exactly. But that is the problem, because ultimately she put in a competent performance, but there wasn't any particular spark. And she got through it to the point that I don't think anyone in her benches was, you know, nervous or worrying whether she would get through the session like they were in that excruciating speech. But they weren't really, you know, infused by her.
You could tell she was obviously trying to turn in a kind of high energy performance, kind of sitting watching her in the gallery. She was kind of bouncing off the bench. I mean, she wanted to be up as quickly as possible. She was trying to show that she was up for it. And I also thought trying to show that she was enjoying it. I mean, it was a slightly different Theresa May performance from usual, in that she was trying to look very vigorous.
She did some sassy eye rolls at the Labour front bench a couple of times as well, didn't she? James, do you think that she will have enough authority to conduct herself in a powerful way at the forthcoming European Council summit?
I think she's going to get hazed a bit by European leaders who are going to suggest that she's not in a position to deliver support in her own parliament for stuff. I think this cuts both ways. On the one hand, I think that she will want to show that she's in charge. On the other hand, she will try and say to them, look, if you push me too far, we are going to fall off a cliff together because I will not be able to do this. And I think that is going to be a kind of interesting tension. I mean, you look at what Donald Tusk has said today. It seems to say, look, you won't get sufficient progress in October, but you will get it in December. And the kind of word from the city is that the UK's got to get this by the end of the year. Otherwise, you know, banks will start triggering their contingency planning and the like. I also think that people shouldn't sweat too much a lack of sufficient progress in October, for the simple reason that until there is a German government, the EU will not... It's not because the Germans are going to come to the UK's rescue or anything like that. That's for the birds. But the EU will not be able to engage constructively on the end state until its most powerful member state has a government.
And Katie, we've got the next round of Brexit negotiations starting up, and David Davis and Michel Barnier have been eating lunch together. Tell us a bit about what they ate and what they discussed as
Yes.
well.
Yes, so as we're, you know, really willing the UK to get on and Brussels to get on with these talks and get to that next stage, Davis and Barnier have been lunching on sea bass, Angus beef, washed down with some souffle, maybe not, and also some fine wines. We're going to have the press conference on Thursday where they will tell us what the update is. But as James has said, we are not expecting there to be a massive breakthrough. I think what will have boosted some people in Whitehall is the fact that Barnier this morning has once again said that May's speech in Florence has brought a new dynamic to these talks. And there is definitely a feeling that they are moving, maybe not moving as fast as people want. I also think if they actually do reach, you know, trade talks or the next stage by December, lots of people will actually be quite delighted. I think the expectation is it could still take longer than that.
And what are the topics up for discussion in this round?
So the rights of EU nationals is still going around. And I think that's one issue where Britain really hoping that their offer will be accepted. Also, we're still talking about the Brexit bill, and we're still talking about the Irish border situation. We saw in the white papers yesterday, they're not really moved anywhere with this, with their stance on the Irish border.
The Irish border, there is a border is inevitable. The issue, I think, is this, is that the Irish government, rather foolishly, I think, have ruled out all sorts of other examples of softer borders from around the world, so US, Canada, Sweden, Norway, France, Switzerland, as being unacceptable. But if the UK is going to leave a customs union, which it is, there is going to have to be a border. And so it would be far more sensible and pragmatic for people to work out how to make that border as smooth as possible, to try and you know, avoid traffic jams on the border, avoid the kind of physical infrastructure that could be vulnerable to some kind of violent attack from kind of renegade elements within the Republican or Loyalist movement, rather than saying we don't want a border. I mean, there is going to have to be a border. There is no way around that.
And tomorrow is Theresa May's first PMQs back after conference season. Katie, what are we expecting the key topics to be at this session? Obviously, Jeremy Corbyn can sometimes go off-piste, but he's got quite a lot to work with this week.
Yeah, I think it's anyone's guess with Jeremy Corbyn. And often, you know, he might seem to have picked something quite clever, but you don't know if it was intentional or if it was just potluck. The thought is he might go on Brexit, the fact that we're not really making as much progress. And also he might go on cabinet splits, so her, you know, party not being united around her. But it's Jeremy Corbyn, so it could be absolutely anything. In terms of Theresa May, what she needs to do is put in a confident performance. I think the benches behind her will be very supportive and they will come out in energy. But we know now that PMQs has become a slightly dull affair, though it normally goes on for just under an hour and little really is uncovered.
Yes, it's not as if Burko extends it so people can ask better questions. It's just so that they can ask more sycophantic questions, isn't it? James, how have the two leaders been performing over the past few months since the snap election?
Well, Jeremy Corbyn is clearly more confident in the House of Commons, but I thought you saw yesterday, you know, a Robin Cook star performer would have completely filleted the government over its divisions and its splits. Corbyn can't do that. He also doesn't, neither Jeremy Corbyn nor Theresa May are comfortable thinking on their feet, which is one of the reasons why PMQs is so dull, because essentially both sides know, Corbyn knows what his six questions are before he goes in, and Theresa May pretty much knows what her six responses are before she goes in. So this kind of goes round and round and round and round. I think that the most important thing for Theresa May tomorrow is obviously not to make a mistake, but she's also got to look like she wants to be there. If she looks like she's desperate for this session to end, it will be difficult for her. I also always saw another little interesting thing to watch for tomorrow, which is you saw the what one might call the kind of pro-EU Labour MPs were clearly on a kind of collective whip. In that they were repeatedly asking this question about legal advice on the revocability of Article 50. So I think you'll see more of that at PMQs as well, an attempt by the kind of alternative Labour Party, if you see what I mean, to push her into different positions.
And finally, just on the subject of people who want to be in the chamber for PMQs and people who don't, Ruth Davidson has given an interview today to the Evening Standard, which is curious given that she is based not in London but Edinburgh. What's she up to, and does that show that she actually wants to be Tory leader potentially more than Theresa May does at the moment?
It is an interview explaining how, you know, what is her great strength, which is this is the person who's revived the Tory party somewhere where people didn't think the Tory party could be revived, telling the London Tories how to win again. You know, it is obviously good publicity for her. I also think that 6 months ago, it was credible to believe that Ruth Davidson might end up as First Minister, because Scottish politics at that point was polarised on a unionist-nationalist divide, and she might well have been the leader of a unionist party that got the most votes. Scottish politics is now returning to a kind of left-right prism. I mean, she hasn't finished speaking, so this is a risk, but you know, Nicola Sturgeon is not talking about independence in her speech that's going on right now to a Scottish National Party conference. And if you look at the effect of Jeremy Corbyn and the Labour revival north of the border, the Labour leadership contest up there, and Sturgeon's move away from independence, it is harder and harder to see how Ruth Davidson is ever going to end up as First Minister of Scotland. In which case, you wonder if she might engineer a move down south before the 2022 general election. Certainly, you sensed a difference when she did Marr and Peston this Sunday, in terms of how opposed to that idea she seemed to be. She seemed to be saying, nothing before 2021, not, no, never.
Katie, you spend a lot of time talking to the 2015 and 2017 intake of Conservative MPs. How is Ruth Davidson regarded amongst those backbenchers?
I think she's very highly regarded, partly because this batch of MPs, they're quite united behind Theresa May. They're not the plotters, because partly because the longer they have this parliament, they often have the marginal seats, so they want to avoid an election at all costs. And they also don't really understand why cabinet can't get over certain things, because they weren't there to kind of go through how they were treated. I think Ruth Davidson they see as being someone who has a positive vision, who can speak about conservatism in an optimistic manner, and also doesn't have the baggage of the cabinet. She's also not trying to undermine the current leader, which means to them she carries a lot of points. And particularly the Scottish Conservative MPs, the 17 intake, everyone says that in that class, all the English 17 intakes say that they kind of act as a mini group of their own. They don't really feel as answerable to Theresa May, and they're very loyal to Ruth.
Thank you, Katie. Thank you, James. And a reminder that you can listen to all of these podcasts on the iTunes store. It's called Coffee House Shots. And we have a special subscription offer for our podcast listeners. 12 issues of The Spectator for £12 plus a special edition Moleskin notebook. Just go to spectator.co.uk/pod offer. Thanks for listening.